the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Hear us who might deceive us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Donald Trump had a meeting in New York City. That's not unusual. He invited some influential leaders. That's probably not unusual either. The leaders that he invited were a rather long list of Christians, mostly evangelicals, as far as we can tell, including some of the big names from kind of the former glory days of what used to be called the moral majority, Jerry Falwell Jr. There were a couple others there. Ralph Reed was in the crowd, along with even James Dobson. What was this meeting for, and how did it get covered, especially given the fact that Donald Trump, while he has garnered the support of some of these leaders, seems to have a hard time articulating the issues in their language? Joining us to talk about this meeting of Christian leaders and the presumptive GOP presidential candidate, Donald Trump, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
We've talked about this forever, it seems. Why are we still talking about it?
Well, there's a simple political reason we're still talking about it, which is you can't be elected president of the United States as a Republican without a massive turnout of white evangelicals. No one would be questioning as whether or not Hillary Clinton needs the African-American vote. What everybody will be discussing is whether the African-American vote will turn out for her to the same degree that it did for her husband, Bill, and then even more so for Barack Obama. But you can't do the mathematics of a Republican running for the White House without factoring in a massive turnout of evangelicals. So here you have this billionaire New Yorker, three-time married gambling magnate who is trying to stand up at podiums and convince Southern Baptists and Assemblies of God to people, and this, that he's one of them, or if he's not one of them, he understands them and really admires them, you know, whatever. We're going around and around in circles because politically speaking, this really matters. The other question, of course, is that he has carved open an agonizing and painful chasm at the heart of evangelical leadership in America right now over issues of honesty and character. And there's just irreconcilable differences right now among evangelical leaders, and everywhere you turn, they're confronted with whether or not they support Donald Trump. And if they don't support Donald Trump, here's the key question. Is failing to support Donald Trump the same thing theologically as supporting Hillary Rodham Clinton, if there's no third option?
I want to come back to that. I agree with you. That's the looming question. For Trump and for these Christian leaders in New York, there's a language barrier, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, it's as far apart as Manhattan and, I don't know, Little Rock, Arkansas, or the suburbs of Dallas, or wherever you want to go. These people don't speak the same language. But I think it's very important for people to understand, and this was a key element of my column this week, and I've been stressing it at Get Religion as well. I think it's important for people to understand that no one thinks Trump can effectively pretend to be an evangelical. And Trump keeps saying things over and over like, I'm a Presbyterian. I think there's only like three of you in the room, which, by the way, tells him he doesn't know anything about Presbyterians in America, because there are lots of Presbyterians in the room. They're just from the Presbyterian Church in America, not from the PCUSA or some other establishment that he would know. They're in the Pacific, the American Northeast, the industrial Northeast. Nobody thinks he can talk evangelical. The question is whether he can talk like a human being when it comes to subjects of religion, instead of this kind of very bizarre mixture of ego and kind of fawning attention like a crazed suitor that he keeps showing whenever he is in the presence of evangelicals whose votes he needs. He comes up with some truly bizarre phrases. My column this week ends with one that I'm just getting all kinds of email from evangelicals about this phrase, where he tells them, I am so on your side. I am a tremendous believer. What the heck? I mean, if you know anything at all about Christian culture, what do those words mean? And what does he think they mean to the listeners, other than yet, you know, another application of his ego?
So what does he have to do here? As you said, no one realistically expects him to pass for a conservative Christian or evangelical. What does he have to do?
I don't know. I have no idea, in the sense that he can't undo the life that he's led. He's not going to stand up there and say, gosh, you know, I wish in all those interviews I hadn't talked about how great it was to get to sleep with all the women I've had a chance to sleep with. He can't pull that off without it turning into a Saturday Night Live sketch, right? So to some degree, he could talk about his family and, you know, and faith is so important to me and I have such a tremendous family. And you know that there are Southern Baptist leaders and others who are sitting out there going, are you really telling us that, you know, that you're an exemplary family man? You know, when we look at your history, he probably can't even pull off some sort of confession that says something like, I did lots and lots of bad things in my past, but I'm really sorry about that, and I understand. This is a man who keeps saying over and over, I don't think I have many sins to confess. I do my best to not do anything wrong, and I think I do a pretty good job of it. The only thing maybe in his world, in his private world, to which Donald Trump will not apply the word huge is his sins. Honestly, I feel like we're going in circles because we are going in circles, and to a certain degree that's the story. What could he say? He needs to say something that sounds honest and sincere. And yet that doesn't seem to be what Donald Trump is, and that doesn't seem to be what his legions of admirers want out of him. They want the display of confidence. They want the ego. They want the winner brand. And that is so difficult to reconcile with anything that resembles Christianity. Let's flash back for a second. Let's look at two other men who have faced these questions in the past. And whatever people think of these men, when Jimmy Carter talked about his faith, he talked about his struggles, famously in a Playboy interview, ironically, which could not conceivably be more different than the Donald Trump Playboy interview. He talked about his sins. He talked about his struggles. He talked about how we live in a broken world. If anything, Carter talked too much about that. And even when people in evangelical pews disagreed with Jimmy Carter, I think a lot of people recognized that his faith language was sincere, and they did not doubt it. We heard a little bit of that, not to the same degree, with George W. Bush, talking about his struggles with alcohol and workaholism in his past. He made a couple of references to that in talks, and you could tell that this was a man who had been in Christian support groups, himself, personally, and he knew what people sounded like when they were talking about that part of their lives. Once again, it didn't mean that you had to like him. It didn't mean that you had to agree with him politically. But when George W. Bush talked about his struggles with alcohol and that he felt bad that that had hurt his family, did anybody really question that he meant it? He had language available to him that sounded real. That's Trump's question right now. How does he talk about Christianity right now in a way that sounds human and sounds like it's actually coming from him and not out of an opinion poll or something?
Jerry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a meeting of Christian leaders and the presumptive GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump on this Thursday afternoon, June the 23rd. We'll talk about Jerry Falwell Jr. right after this.
Do you dread going to work out?
Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
What would you say if someone asked you to explain the Trinity? Would you begin with Scripture, the creeds, or some clever analogy? And how are Christ and the gospel at the center of this fundamental Christian teaching? Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Beckwith has written a new book in the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic series. It's titled The Holy Trinity. You can save $5 by pre-ordering The Holy Trinity at logia.org, logia.org.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia. Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California. Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas. Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas. Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. IssuesETC.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about that meeting on Tuesday between Donald Trump and Christian leaders in New York City. Terry, at that meeting, there were probably many who needed convincing. We don't know if they were convinced or not, but one didn't seem to need much, and that was Jerry Falwell Jr., who several months ago was kind of tentative in his support of Donald Trump when he spoke at Liberty University, where he's president. but as of yesterday was tweeting out pictures of himself and his wife in Donald Trump's office giving the thumbs up. What's going on here?
No, he, I think, has bought the fact that nobody needs a pastor. We need a political partner who's willing to kick some butt. And I think Falwell is just that blunt in being honest about the fact that he believes this is the only political game in town that gives him a chance on the issues that matter to him, and he's willing to state it that bluntly. A lot of people are not. There are quotes circulating right now in a lot of stories. I didn't have room for them in my column. From another person associated with the founding of the religious right, and that would be Michael Ferris, the chancellor of the liberal arts college that for homeschoolers there in the Virginia area outside of Washington, D.C., Patrick Henry. Ferris, more importantly than that, as important as that school may be, he is the godfather, legally, of the homeschool movement. And it would be hard to name many religious liberty issues more important to the history of conservative Christianity over the last 20 or 30 years than the homeschool movement. Ferris just came right out and said, "You don't want me at this meeting. I'm not going to this meeting." He called that meeting yesterday a day of mourning and the death of the religious right. And he said, and the reason is because we sincerely wanted people in office that we didn't have to agree with them on everything, but we felt they were people of character. Can anyone with a straight face say that they believe Donald Trump's career shows him to be a person of honesty and character? Or is part of the art of the deal basically being able to pull off whatever you need to pull out of the hat at any moment in terms of your positions, what you're willing to say, what you're willing to do to get the deal, et cetera, et cetera? Kind of an ends justify the means worldview. So this chasm has opened up at the heart of evangelicalism over whether character actually matters in political life, or is it all just a matter of expediency?
It seems as though the media coverage of this has suffered a little bit from the same problem that Trump himself has, and that is the language barrier. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think you could raise a question at this point of whether it will be possible for the American media to cover Donald Trump in a way that is unbiased, balanced, accurate, fair. I know it's a struggle for me to even read his speeches and try to take material out of them, you know, to use in a column, because he's so staggeringly blunt and arrogant and rude. And most of the other political leaders we are dealing with today are, of course, a lot of those things, but in ways that are so much more conventional. Does anyone think that if they had put the doors of this meeting yesterday, this forum in New York City with Trump, if they had made that an open meeting and invited the press in, does anyone think that would have turned out well? The answer is no, at which point that puts the press in an even worse situation, to where now they have to cover the meeting based totally on what comes out of the meeting in various forms of social media, which to some degree you have no chance to cover the words that were actually spoken. You can only cover words that are spoken about the words that were spoken, if that makes any sense, other than perhaps a few social media snippets that come out in audio or video, chunks of things. And what fair-minded old school journalists want is to be able to hear the full text of something like a speech and then be able to ask people honest questions about the reactions to it on both sides. Well, the very nature of the current divide between Donald Trump and the press, you know, with him, you know, tossing the Washington Post out or trying to, and this open warfare that he feeds off of, which, I mean, this is Richard Nixon on steroids when it comes to trying to demonize the press. To some degree, his campaign is a war against the press. That's how he handles the press. So it's like postmodernism or something. It's, everything is turned inside out. So we don't know how to cover a man who to some degree doesn't want to be covered fairly. Does that make sense? It's not in his interest to be covered fairly. It's in his interest for things to turn into a kind of reality show drama that fires up his fans. This has more to do with the social dynamics of professional wrestling than it does with the Lincoln-Douglas debates. You think, is that a fair comparison?
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this meeting between Christian leaders and Donald Trump in New York City. Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. Stay tuned.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Hi, this is Pastor Dan Kistler of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Pacifica, California. A small congregation on the Pacific Coast just south of San Francisco, we invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation that He won for us on the cross and now delivers to us through His Word, baptism, and the Lord's Supper. For more information about us or for free downloadable sermons, visit our website at oursaviorspacifica.com. God's peace be with you always in our Savior, Jesus Christ.
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Donald Trump's meeting with Christian leaders in New York City. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, I wonder if anything comes of this because, I mean, Donald Trump is not known as someone who kowtows to any group. Is anything going to come of this? Is this going to be anything more than simply Donald Trump showing up for this group as he has for others?
I don't know. I still... You know, in the darkness of my heart of hearts, I have sincere doubts about whether the man wants to be president or whether this is all just some sort of effort to build his brand. I think I've mentioned that in previous conversations. That's my son's theory, that he's doing this to get Hillary Clinton elected because that will be very good for Wall Street. And, of course, there's a Trump building within shouting distance of the stock exchange. I can be real cynical about that. There still are cards to be played in this drama. The leaking, the hackers that are beginning to cut their way through the security surrounding a lot of the materials around Hillary Clinton, this will only increase the closer we get to the FBI either acting or not acting in terms of whether the Justice Department prevents them from indicting. I've been referring to this at Get Religion as the FBI primary. And to some degree, it's the only game left that really matters. At the same time, there was a meeting following the 1,000 folks listening to Donald Trump and company. There was a meeting after that of other evangelicals who are quietly still working with the Never Trump political forces. And we're beginning to hear genuine sounds of nervousness at the level of the Republican Party over issues of basic political infrastructure. Like, does Trump actually have as much money as he says he does? Could he self-finance? If he isn't going to self-finance, last month he raised $1 million. Hillary raised, what, was it $42 million?
Mm-hmm.
The Clintons are a living, breathing money machine for reasons that are both horrifying and built on their years of just kind of political networks on the positive side. I still don't think we have any idea what will happen at the Republican National Convention. Maybe that I'm just delusional enough. I'm holding out that hope just for the sake of America, because I put myself, you know, in the same boat with those people. There was a post to Get Religion this week. I don't know if you saw it. The Washington Post did a follow-up on the woman in Virginia who, in her obituary, she said that rather than face the choice of voting for either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, she gladly went home to God. She gladly went home to heaven and doesn't have to make a choice in this election. The Washington Post did a follow-up, and apparently there's been like 100, almost 120 obituaries of this sort this year, people who have either said, I'm so glad I don't have to vote in this election, at least I died before Election Day, or you have people saying the opposite, which is, I'm dying, in lieu of flowers, please go to the polls and either vote for Trump or vote against Trump. As if you want to honor me, go to the polls and vote against Trump. Or go to the polls and vote for Trump. People have done both of that. But other folks have done this ultimate expression of kind of depression about this election, which is, hey, I don't have to vote. I'm going to die in time that I don't have to vote for either of these losers. You know, looking at this from a moral and theological perspective. To me, the real question here is, you know, a word that we use to Get Religion a lot is theodicy, which is the old question of when bad things happen to good people. C.S. Lewis's phrase was God in the dock, meaning God being placed on trial. Why does God allow certain things to happen? At this point, for lots of serious religious believers, this presidential election has turned into a question of theodicy. Why is God allowing this to happen to our country? And if that is a part of God's providence and a part of God's plan, what did we do to deserve this? People have been able to say that a long time, pointing the finger at one side or the other. But right now, America's got nobody to point at except, and from my perspective, both of these candidates. And a lot of very serious religious believers are, quite frankly, in agony out there.
Two final questions for you, Terry. And I want to get back to that theological question that you raised at the beginning. But first, when was the last time, or has there been a time, let's just say for the sake of argument, Trump is elected. When was the last time, or has there been a time, that we've had an occupant, or would have an occupant of the White House, who either apparently understood so little or didn't really care to understand American religious life, which is so woven into our public life and our politics too?
I really have no way to judge that, you know, in the sense that you've had people in office who were either liberal believers or mainline believers, or I'm in my office here in Oak Ridge, I have a portrait of FDR hanging on the wall. If push came to shove, I'm not sure the degree to which FDR was a traditional Christian or some sort of kind of deist, clockmaker deist. I really don't know. He sure did use religious language effectively in his speeches, which meant at the very least he knew he needed to hire talent who could get this done. I don't know how to answer your question on that.
Well, then finally, with only about a minute here, you asked the question, the theological question, is a failure to support Trump effectively support for Hillary Clinton? At this point in time, with about a minute here, how would you answer that question?
No, I say obviously not. There have been political elections in the past where, as a pro-life Democrat, I could not pull the lever with a clear conscience. And I do not believe that our responsibility to the state demands that we violate our religious conscience. So I'm just not willing to allow myself to be shoved into that trap. We owe our nation a willingness to vote and take part in the political system. I don't think that means that at certain moments we have to make a choice between two candidates that we cannot in good conscience support. That's my stand.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you.
Okay,